Hello, everyone. You are listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mann, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. And have I got a story for you today? Today, I decided to take a look back on not just the original Blade Runner, but its sequel, Blade Runner 2049. Blade Runner was released in the year 1982, while 25 years later, in October 2017, a sequel, Blade Runner 2049, was released. Now, I decided that I would like to talk about both films for today's episode because I felt like talking about one without the other is a very weird thing to do, considering how tied together these movies seem and actually are on the surface. But since I am talking about two different movies for today, I would like to reiterate that on this show, we will be discussing the plot summaries, production techniques, character arcs, and what aspiring storytellers can learn. And so, for those of you who have not seen Blade Runner or its sequel, Blade Runner 2049, I highly recommend that you do before listening to today's episode. Now, to get started, I would like to talk more about the production background and history, as well as the plot summary of the first film, Blade Runner. Now, Blade Runner is a 1982 science fiction film directed by Ridley Scott and written by Hampton Fancher and David Peoples. It stars Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Sean Young, and Edward James Olmos. And it is loosely based on Philip K. Dick's 1968 novel, Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? The film itself is set within a dystopian future Los Angeles of the year 2019, in which synthetic humans known as replicants are bioengineered by the powerful Tyrell Corporation to work at space colonies. When a fugitive group of advanced replicants led by Roy Batty escapes back to Earth, burnt-out cop Rick Deckard reluctantly agrees to hunt them down. Now, Blade Runner initially underperformed in North American theaters, and it even polarized critics, with some praising its thematic complexity and visuals, while others critiqued its slow pacing and very much lack of action. In later years, it has actually been considered an acclaimed cult film, regarded as one of the all-time best science fiction films. Hailed for its production design depicting a decaying future, Blade Runner is a leading example of neo-noir cinema, and the film's soundtrack, composed by Vangelis, was nominated in 1982 for a BAFTA and a Golden Globe as Best Original Score. The film has influenced many science fiction films, video games, anime, and television series. It even brought the work of Philip K. Dick to the attention of Hollywood, and several later big-budget films were based on his work, such as Total Recall, Minority Report, and A Scanner Darkly. In the year after its release, Blade Runner won the Hugo Award for Best Dramatic Presentation, and in 1993, it was selected for preservation in the U.S. National Film Registry by the Library of Congress as being culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. Now, with Blade Runner, in terms of the story of Blade Runner, it is very much complicated and muddled within a lot of studio executive and company tampering. Seven different versions of Blade Runner exist as a result of controversial changes requested by some of these studio executives. And a director's cut was released in 1992 after a strong response to test screenings of a work print version. This, in conjunction with the film's popularity as a video rental, made it one of the earliest movies to even be released on DVD. And in 2007, Warner Brothers eventually released The Final Cut, which is a 25th anniversary digitally remastered version, and the only version over which director Ridley Scott was able to retain artistic control over. But the overall plot of Blade Runner is set within 2019 Los Angeles, with former policeman Rick Deckard detained by Officer Gaff and brought to his former supervisor, Bryant. Deckard, whose job as a Blade Runner was to track down bioengineered humanoids known as replicants and terminally retire them, is informed that 4 replicants are on Earth illegally. Deckard begins to leave, but Bryant ambiguously threatens him, and Deckard stays. The two watch a video of a Blade Runner named Holden administering the Voight-Kampff test, which is designed to distinguish replicants from humans based on their emotional response to questions. The test subject, Leon, shoots Holden on the second question. Bryant wants Deckard to retire Leon and the other 3 Nexus 6 replicants, Roy Batty, Zora, and Pris. Bryant has Deckard meet with the CEO of the company that creates the replicants, Eldon Tyrell, so that he can administer the test on a Nexus 6 to see if it works. Tyrell expresses his interest in seeing the test fail first and asks him to administer it on his assistant Rachel. After a much longer than standard test, Deckard concludes that Rachel is a replicant who believes that she is human. Tyrell explains that she is an experiment who has been given false memories to provide an emotional cushion. Searching Leon's hotel room, Deckard finds photos and a synthetic snake scale. Roy and Leon investigate a replicant eye manufacturing laboratory and learn of J.F. Sebastian, a gifted genetic designer who works closely with Tyrell. Deckard then returns to his apartment where Rachel is waiting for him. She tries to prove her humanity by showing him a family photo, but after Deckard reveals that her memories are implants from Tyrell's niece, she leaves in tears. Meanwhile, Pris locates Sebastian and manipulates him to gain his trust. A photograph from Leon's apartment and the snake scale lead Deckard to a strip club where Zora works. After a confrontation and chase, Deckard kills Zora. Bryant also orders him to retire Rachel, who has disappeared from the Tyrell Corporation. After Deckard spots Rachel in a crowd, he is ambushed by Leon, who knocks the gun out of Deckard's hand and attacks him. As Leon is about to kill Deckard, Rachel saves him by using Deckard's gun to kill Leon. They return to Deckard's apartment, and during a discussion, he promises not to track her down. As Rachel abruptly tries to leave, Deckard restrains her and forces her to kiss him. Rachel continues to resist, and Deckard blocks her attempts to leave. He persists in his advances, and she ultimately relents. Arriving at Sebastian's apartment, Roy tells Pris that the other replicants are dead. Sympathetic to their plight, Sebastian reveals that because of Methuselah syndrome, a genetic premature aging disorder, his life will be cut short as well, just like the replicants that were built with a 4-year lifespan. Sebastian and Roy gain entrance into Tyrell's penthouse, where Roy demands more life from his maker. Tyrell tells him that it is impossible, and Roy confesses that he has done questionable things, but Tyrell dismisses this, praising Roy's advanced design and accomplishments in his short life. Roy then kisses Tyrell, then kills him. Sebastian runs for the elevator, followed by Roy, who rides the elevator down alone. Deckard is later told by Bryant that Sebastian was found dead. At Sebastian's apartment, Deckard is ambushed by Pris, but he kills her as Roy returns. Roy's body begins to fail as the end of his lifespan nears. He chases Deckard through the building, ending up on the roof. Deckard tries to jump onto another roof, but is left hanging on the edge. Roy makes the jump with ease, and as Deckard's grip loosens, Roy hoists him onto the roof to save him. Before Roy dies, he delivers a monologue about how his memories will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Gaff arrives and shouts to Deckard about Rachel. It's too bad that she won't live, but then again, who does? Deckard returns to his apartment and finds Rachel asleep in his bed. Deckard then sees an origami unicorn, which makes him recall Gaff's words. He leaves the apartment block with Rachel. Now that was the overall plot summary of the original Blade Runner film. Tune into our next segment, where I will be talking about Blade Runner 2049, the sequel to 1982's Blade Runner. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Every year, millions of Americans get into car accidents because they're too obsessed with their phones. Do you really need to comment, "Oh my gosh, so cute," on the picture of Kelly's dog while you're driving in the middle of a highway? If it's absolutely necessary to use your phone, pull over. Distracted driving is dangerous driving. So don't be that person. Put the phone down. It can wait. This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. And today, I have so far taken a look back on the original Blade Runner film from 1982 and some of its production history, as well as the overall plot summary of the film. Now I'd like to talk more about Blade Runner 2049, which is a 2017 American science fiction film directed by Denis Villeneuve and written by Hampton Fancher and Michael Green. A sequel to the 1982 film Blade Runner, the film stars Ryan Gosling and Harrison Ford with Ana de Armas, Sylvia Hoeix, Robin Wright, Mackenzie Davis, Carla Jury, Lenny James, Dave Bautista, and Jared Leto in supporting roles. Ford and Edward James Olmos reprise their roles from the original, while Gosling plays Kay, a Nexus 9 replicant Blade Runner who uncovers a secret that threatens to destabilize society and the course of civilization. Ideas for a Blade Runner sequel were first proposed in the 1990s, but licensing issues stalled their development. Andrew Cassove and Broderick Johnson obtained the film rights from Bud Yorkin. Ridley Scott stepped down as the film's initial director and worked as an executive producer instead, while Villeneuve was later appointed to direct. Blade Runner 2049 was financed through an Alcon Entertainment Sony Pictures partnership and a Hungarian government-funded tax rebate. Warner Brothers Pictures, on behalf of Alcon, distributed the film in North America, while Sony handled distribution in international markets. Principal photography took place mostly at two sound stages in Budapest over a four-month period from July to November 2016. Blade Runner 2049 premiered in Los Angeles on October 3rd, 2017, and was released in the United States in 2D, 3D, and IMAX on October 6th, 2017. The film itself was praised by critics for its performances, direction, cinematography, editing, musical score, production design, visual effects, and faithfulness to the original film, and was considered by many critics to be among the best films of 2017. However, it was a box office disappointment, grossing just $260.5 million worldwide against a production budget between $150 million and $185 million. Blade Runner 2049 was nominated for and won several accolades, receiving 5 nominations at the 90th Academy Awards, winning Best Cinematography and Best Visual Effects. It also received 8 nominations at the 71st British Academy Film Awards, including Best Director, and won Best Cinematography and Best Special Visual Effects. The plot of Blade Runner 2049 takes place in, as you guessed it, the year 2049. Bioengineered humans, known as replicants, are slaves. K, short for serial number KD6-3.7, is a Nexus 9 replicant that works for the Los Angeles Police Department as a Blade Runner an officer who hunts and retires, meaning kills, rogue replicants. At a protein farm, he retires Sapper Morton and finds a box buried under a tree. The box contains the remains of a female replicant who died during a cesarean section, demonstrating that replicants can reproduce biologically, previously thought impossible. K's superior, Lieutenant Joshi, fears that this could lead to a war between humans and replicants. She then orders K to find and retire the replicant child to hide the truth. K visits the headquarters of the Wallace Corporation, the successor to the defunct Tyrell Corporation and the manufacturer of replicants. Wallace staff members identify the deceased female from DNA archives as Rachel, an experimental replicant designed by Dr. Eldon Tyrell. K learns of Rachel's romantic ties with former Blade Runner Rick Deckard. Wallace Corporation CEO Neander Wallace wants to discover the secret to replicant reproduction to expand interstellar colonization. He sends his replicant enforcer, Love, to steal Rachel's remains and follow K to Rachel's child. At Morton's farm, K sees the date 6-10-21 carved into the tree trunk and recognizes it from a childhood memory of a wooden toy horse. Because replicants' memories are artificial, K's holographic AI girlfriend, Joy, believes this is evidence that K was born, not created. He searches LAPD records and discovers twins born on that date, with identical DNA aside from the sex chromosome, but only the boy is listed as alive. K tracks the child to an orphanage in ruined San Diego, but discovers the records from that year to be missing. K recognizes the orphanage from his memories and finds the toy horse where he remembers hiding it. Dr. Anna Staline, a replicant memory designer, confirms that the memory of the orphanage is real, leading K to conclude that he is Rachel's son. At LAPD headquarters, K fails a post-traumatic baseline test, marking him as a rogue replicant. He lies to Joshi by implying he killed the replicant child. Joshi gives K 48 hours to disappear. At Joy's request, K reluctantly transfers her to a mobile emitter so he cannot be tracked through her console memory files. He has the toy horse analyzed, revealing traces of radiation that lead him to the ruins of Las Vegas. He finds Deckard, who reveals that he is the father of Rachel's child, and that he scrambled the birth records to protect the child's identity. Deckard left the child in the custody of the Replicant Freedom Movement. Love kills Joshi and tracks K to Las Vegas. She kidnaps Deckard, destroys Joy, and leaves K to die. The Replicant Freedom Movement rescues K, and when their leader, Frisa, tells him that she helped deliver Rachel's child and that her child was actually a girl, K understands that he is not Rachel's child, deduces that Staline is her daughter, and that the memory of the toy horse is also hers, one she implanted amongst those of other replicants whose memories she designed. To prevent Deckard from leading Wallace to Staline or the Freedom Movement, Frisa asks K to kill Deckard for the greater good of all replicants. Love then takes Deckard to Wallace Corporation headquarters to meet with Wallace. Wallace offers Deckard a clone of Rachel in exchange for revealing what he knows. Deckard refuses, and the clone is killed. As Love transports Deckard to be tortured and interrogated off-world, K intercepts Love's shuttle and tries to rescue Deckard. He fights Love and manages to drown her, but he is mortally wounded. He stages Deckard's death to protect him from Wallace and the Replicant Freedom Movement before taking Deckard to Staline's office and handing him her toy horse. As K lies motionless on the steps, looking up at the snowing sky, Deckard enters the building and meets his daughter for the very first time. Now, that was just the overall plot summary of Blade Runner 2049, the sequel to Blade Runner which was released back in 1982. Now, just to clear up any misconceptions about when the two films take place, Blade Runner takes place within Los Angeles in the year 2019, while Blade Runner 2049 takes place just 30 years later within the same city of Los Angeles, but in the year of 2049. Tune into our next segment, where I will be discussing the overall character arc of Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio. It only takes 3 seconds to put on your seatbelt every time you get into a car, and it just might save your life. Car accidents are unavoidable because they are, in fact, accidents. But the choice you make to put on your seatbelt every time you get in the car can change the outcome of a potential accident. Make sure you and your loved ones buckle up every time and help save lives.
Hello everyone, we are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. So far, I have taken a look back on 1982's Blade Runner and 2017's Blade Runner 2049. I have looked at the overall plot summaries between the two films and some of the production background and history behind the two. Now, I'd like to talk more about the overall arc of not just Blade Runner, but its sequel as well, Blade Runner 2049. First, I'd like to talk about what exactly a replicant is. A replicant is a fictional bioengineered being that first appeared to be manufactured by the Tor-El Corporation for off-world labor. These Nexus 6 through 8 replicants would eventually be replaced by the Nexus 9 replicants manufactured by Wallace Corporation, who were designed to be full slaves. Replicants are virtually identical to adult humans, but have superior strength, speed, agility, resilience, and intelligence, to varying degrees depending on each model. A replicant can only be detected by means of the fictional Voight-Kampff test, in which emotional responses are provoked and a replicant's nonverbal responses differ from those of a human. Blade Runner 2049 foregoes one of the many recurring themes of not just science fiction, but fiction in general. It foregoes and subverts the theme and question of what it means to be human. In fact, I propose that both Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 pose the core question of what happens when humans lose their humanity. Blade Runner 2049 sheds the most light on the fact that replicants have inherited and continue to exhibit the true humanity of their human creators. The original Blade Runner's main antagonistic replicant of Roy Batty briefly displays this idea when he chooses to go against his greater programming of killing any threat to himself, by choosing to instead save Rick Deckard's life. Deckard's overall role within Blade Runner proves that humans are the more cold-hearted machines compared to their own creations, to their own machines, which is an idea that serves as the basis for Blade Runner 2049. Wallace himself, who is also CEO of the Wallace Corporation and central antagonist of the film, embodies this concept throughout the story. A slight example of this is the fact that early in the film, a character reveals that owning a small genuine wooden toy horse is essentially far more valuable than gold itself. Wallace's whole apartment is created from wood that would seem like it's unfathomably expensive, within this world at least. Yet it doesn't really feel that way. His apartment's wooden walls are shown to be featureless. There are no paintings or other small details. The fact that Wallace's apartment lacks any kind of detail shows that he is a character who has lost the ability to appreciate such small details, who has lost their humanity. This is even reflected more within his bid to win information out of the older Deckard by providing him with a clone replicant of Rachel, whose eyes are not the same as the originals, a small detail that Deckard discovered, not Wallace. If the eyes are the window to the soul, then from looking into Wallace's milky white / extra robotic eyes, it means he has achieved incredible things and it has costed him his humanity. Honestly, every single human character within Blade Runner 2049 is shown to be despondent, distant from displaying or even feeling any emotion whatsoever. Wallace casually kills a newborn replicant mid-conversation, while Deckard doesn't even look at the death of the replicant clone of his beloved wife. The police chief doesn't even show any signs of real pain when her glass cup is crushed by Wallace's assistant Love within her own hand. And to her, it even seems like it looks to be just a minor annoyance or discomfort. One character that proves to be the exception to this standard is Dr. Anna Staline. She seemingly has an ability that no other character has, despite spending most of her life trapped inside of a dome. She shows tears after seeing Kay's memories. The one human that is least in touch with society is the most in touch with her humanity. Staline embodies the concept of being eternally trapped as a prisoner within a cage, and thus appreciating something as simple as even freedom itself. Joy, the virtual girlfriend that is seemingly adopted by this dystopian society and its masses, also adds to the degradation of humanity. People of this future have opted out of having real romantic relationships with others, as emotional or more emotional than oneself, in favor of being with the half that is everything you want to hear. For Kay, Joy convinces him early within his case that he is special. Later on, after his Joy's destruction at the hands of Love, he runs into a gigantic promotional advertisement of Joy that reiterates her earlier sentiment about him, which is a poetic reflection of how Joy is made to grant validation no matter how deserved it is. It is also a poetic realization for Kay, who finally sees the beautiful lies behind Joy. Because of the character of Joy, the core message of the Blade Runner films is highlighted, which is the warning of laziness within the human condition, especially relating to technology. Hypothetically, if our current society would follow the path of Blade Runner society, then our dependency on technology and the laziness behind it would destroy our humanity. But going back to the earlier posed question by the film of what happens when humans lose their humanity, this is what would happen. A society with sufficiently advanced technology would grow to become dependently lazy upon the technology they've created, to become dependent upon the replicants that replicate their very humanity. Yet, Blade Runner 2049 answers this ultimate dystopian scenario with another question within its own world, with the question of what separates man from machine, of which the answer is an interesting and subversive inverse of choice. Choice equating to humanity is prevalent throughout both Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049, such as Roy Batty's choice to rebel against his killer programming and to save Deckard within the first film, and especially when the Replicant Freedom Movement demands Kay that he kill Deckard to protect their information. Kay, within the final act of Blade Runner 2049, chooses to instead opt out of killing Deckard and make the human choice of saving him from Wallace and Love. Both Roy Batty and Kay became human when they decided to save Deckard on either occasion. And coming back to the overall subject of humanity, for most of us, when presented with the options of exercise, love, or work, it is safe to say we usually choose the path that is not the most right, but the path that is the most easy, at least for ourselves individually. Human nature leads to the path not least traveled, but the most. Technology and a certain reliance upon it. Ironically, when we give into that part of human nature, we cease to be human. The free will of humanity becomes a joke when the easiest path of conveniency and synthetic love is taken instead of the path of choice and rebellion against a baser instinct. Within the story of Blade Runner 2049, replicants show more emotion than their human creators. Kay, along his journey of discovering the truth, begins to show more emotion with each new revelation, no matter how relevant the revelation might be to his own part within the overall story. Kay is a character that embodies both sides of the coin of human and replicant. Because within the world of Blade Runner, replicants are not clones of humanity. Within Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049, the humans are the machines, while the machines are the humans. And this is the part where, like the film, I revealed that Kay was not the focus of this episode's character arc analysis. Kay, despite how cool and quiet of a charismatic character he is, was not my focus for today's segment upon the central character of Blade Runner 2049. Heck, even Deckard wasn't even my focus for Blade Runner itself. Instead of relying upon my baser instinct of solely focusing upon either one of the two characters, I rebelled by making the choice not to in favor of another character. Us. Humanity. Today, I chose to examine the central character of humanity within Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. Because like these films, there was more to the arcs than meet the eyes, especially with humanity and the souls that are on display within this world of man and machine, of replicant and human. Tune into our next segment, where I will be discussing what aspiring storytellers can learn from Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California.
The following PSA is brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio.
Hello, it is me, a very attractive person. You can trust me. Are you tired of people constantly trying to kiss you on the lips? What I do to relieve this problem is wear a mask. Wearing a mask keeps all those grody lips away from my perfect smoocher. It also keeps germs from away from other people. But it's mostly just so people stop trying to kiss me. If you're tired of people constantly trying to kiss you on the lips, then wear a mask.
This PSA has been brought to you by the DJs at Penguin Radio and the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California.
Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today, I've taken a look back on both Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 and its overall plot summaries, as well as a little bit of its production background and the overall character arc of humanity Now I would like to focus on what aspiring storytellers and writers can learn from Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049. Human beings have a natural drive of creativity. Every day, humanity creates something new, whether it be in the field of construction or field of entertainment. We have the potential to create anything, both literally and figuratively. And I like to think that the reason why this is such an innate part of our nature, such a huge part of ourselves, is because of the senses of freedom and control that it brings us. Imagine creating a film, creating an adaptation of an already existing story, and for years not having any kind of control over the final cut of said film. Blade Runner's director Ridley Scott doesn't have to imagine, because he lived it. To this day, there are 7 different versions of 1982's Blade Runner. 4 of these versions, the work print prototype, the San Diego sneak preview, US theatrical release, and international theatrical release, were all produced in 1982 and each vary in length and scene arrangement. The US broadcast version, also known as the extremely censored for TV version, was released in 1986, and the quote-unquote director's cut was released in 1992 with little oversight from the director himself. But it wasn't until the year 2007, just 25 years later, that Ridley Scott would be able to completely control the artistic integrity of Blade Runner and release the final cut of it. Despite the fact that one is the sequel to another, there is one overall key difference between Blade Runner and Blade Runner 2049 that makes them two completely different films from each other. That difference is creative control. The reason why there are 7 different versions of the original Blade Runner is because so many various studio executives and production companies and even broadcast companies forcefully held onto the final creative say of the film. The original Blade Runner is the best example of what could go wrong with a film that even its original creators have no control over. And Blade Runner 2049 is the best example of what could go right with complete creator control. Blade Runner 2049 is a film that was ultimately created and controlled by its original creators, writers Hampton Fancher and Michael Green, along with director Denis Villeneuve, were clearly able to tell the story they wanted to tell. They were clearly able to have the control and freedom of creating a movie for everyone to see. Even though Ridley Scott had to fight and wait for years to be given that same control, he still finally received that creative bliss and chance from the pure fact that he persisted in his artistic vision. For those of you out there who have created something or want to create something and are scared of not having that creative control and freedom, don't be. Instead, be strong in the fact that freedom rests within what your creativity controls. Humans have been telling each other stories for a very, very, very long time now. That being said, I think we've all gotten used to film and other modes of storytelling following a certain set of rules of classical storytelling. This is not necessarily a bad thing, because most of the time, these rules work. Blade Runner 2049 begins like it's going to make a lot of those same conventional choices and follow the same set of standards. In it, we get a deeply oppressed protagonist who starts out as a character without any notoriety, as a character who is a nobody, and Kay even keeps up with the tradition of being an orphan. But everything, and I mean everything, begins to change for this one character when he starts to unravel the significance of an emotionally charged childhood memory which naturally turns out to be a dangerous secret that reveals his shocking origin story. One that, of course, sets him at the dangerous center of a conflict between the powers that be. Pretty typical stuff. Yet, instead of following through with these established expectations, with these rules, the story suddenly takes a different path, a path less traveled. Kay is not anyone important. He was a replicant that was churned out of Wallace's corporation, just like anyone else. The genuine childhood memory that he has been carrying inside his head has been someone else's all this time. The greater personal risk that he has carried within unraveling the story is not even about him. Screenwriters Hampton Fancher and Michael Green didn't only make the decision to center the story on someone missing the usual protagonistic significance, they chose to start Kay in an unremarkable place and then went out of their way to build him all the way up, only to get him as high as he could be, just for them to shove him past the edge to come crashing back down to the earth all over again. Kay is not important, which is a very, very, very pointed decision, in my opinion, with the storytelling of the film. Within the classical modes of storytelling, Dr. Anna Steleen serves to be the truly central figure that gives the legendary item, the memory, to Kay, our film's hero. I add this note because Steleen offers a subversive side to the film's story, in that she is the truly important character and not our own main hero. Yet, even after this earth-shattering and unique revelation, Kay still persists to try and do the right thing by reuniting her with Deckard, with her father. He still actively chooses to be the truly unimportant main hero of the story, even though the ramifications of any outcome for them really wouldn't directly affect him at all whatsoever. This is the creative decision that won over my admiration for Blade Runner 2049, as it chooses to tell a story that is not a service to its main protagonist, but instead tells a story that services all of its characters. Which, when looking at it through the right lens or light, proves to be a lesson that even storytellers and real-life heroes should follow. That sometimes, it just isn't your story. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouman, with top stories at the bottom of the hour on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Thank you for listening.